But the biggest pivot I have ever done is COVID. We work with events, and then overnight, like COVID, lockdown all over, and I have seen our revenues like going from very high to almost zero. And I remember like the before March 2020, I was literally at like, I don't know, six different cities just in that month, attending events. And I arrived in Cairo just like a couple of days before the lockdown, and I was just there. So we had to think. I think it was a very emotional experience, but very tough, but also it needed a lot of like persistence and perseverance. So we had to think like, what should we do? Should we just call it off and shut it down, or?
Mai, welcome to the show. You're Egyptian born and raised. You studied IT engineering in Egypt before meeting your co-founder, Nihal, and then you started a business called Aventus. You ran that for 10 years. You then sold that business. It was acquired by Bevy, a tech giant out of California, the United States. And today you're starting your second venture, which you can tell me all about.
Sure. Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here. Right now I'm starting Jenny AI. We were in Stealth, and it's basically like a challenge that I have seen many times. I experienced firsthand hiring, growing, and training sales teams, especially in B2B, is very hard, very challenging. Especially if you have like a complex product, like there's a lot of customizations and details in the product. It becomes very challenging to transfer the knowledge from the minds of the CEO or the early employees to the rest of the team when you are scaling the go-to-market team, basically. So, and usually like sales teams, they don't come from a technical background. They may be coming from different domains or industries. So there is a lot to learn, and ramping up, it takes a lot of time. It's very expensive for companies. So this is the challenge we're trying to solve using Gen AI and voice AI. We're building a co-pilot for B2B sales teams. Basically, we understand the product knowledge, we connect to the company knowledge base, understand that, structure the product information and the unstructured content or knowledge, and then surface that in real time to the sales teams live during calls. I think the idea or the grand vision here is basically clone your best salespeople, like learn from why some of the sales reps are really like doing great job hitting the targets all the time, and some others are struggling. Identify winning patterns and then share that across the team. So basically, we uplevel the whole sales team, helping companies realize more revenue, grow, and then they grow with us as well.
Amazing. You've been a tech entrepreneur for over 10 years, and your first venture, Aventus, you co-founded in 2011. Tell me about that, and what was Aventus, or what is Aventus?
Aventus. It's an events platform. I loved going to events, conferences, and exhibitions, and I feel there's a gap here, so we can fill it in by technology. Events in general is a very traditional industry, and it needed some disruption. So Aventus is like an all-in-one platform helping event organizers manage events from a ticketing platform like booking and payments and all of that to a networking app for events for the attendees to find like-minded people or people to connect with them. Helping exhibitors to find like people who are interested in their services and so on. So it's like a full platform for events.
I mean, also a idea or a business that came out of your own personal experience, right? So you met your co-founder at a networking event, thought that this could be done better, and that's exactly what you did. By the time you exited, you were in 60 cities, you had 20,000 events on the platform. Like, that's a huge success. Did you ever think that you would get to that level of size when you had that original idea back in 2011?
I think back then I was very new to all of this. We were just like trying to do something. Like I started in Cairo, and the ecosystem back then, it was very new. Like we joined the first startup weekend event to happen in Cairo. So we met there, we were like discovering ideas and working and meeting people, and it was new. Like we couldn't imagine what can we do back then, and then where this can go. It was a learning experience, I would say.
Mm. Yeah. So talk me through about pivoting. So a lot of great ideas do not stay the same idea over the course of their lifetime. You ran a business, you built a business, you sold a business for 10 years. That is, it's an overnight success, but overnight success, it takes 10 years, right? So how long did you sort of stick with each sort of idea or experiment through that journey?
Changing all the time. So I will tell you two things. First is we started actually as a networking app. We wanted to build connect people during events because we believe that these are people with similar backgrounds. They are coming to event to meet other people, so we can ignite conversations and make people make the most out of these events. But it was too early, I would say. So when we went and talked to event organizers, basically our customers, they don't really care about that. They care about ticketing. Are we going to book for the event? Are people are showing up for the event or not? So we had to solve this problem first so we can give them the networking app. So that was the vision, but we had to solve a little few other challenges so we can get into the customers, and from there we can sell the networking app. And then that also evolved. It started as one app, the Eventus app. You download it, you discover events, and then you find the events, you book, and you go, and then you find all the networking people or the attendees on the app. But that also didn't work at the beginning. So we were faced by organizers who are asking, I want my brand to be the front face. I want people to download my own app, not the Eventus app. So we had to challenge this, and we had to challenge ourselves as well. So we had this as a low cost, easy for meetups and solution for meetups and smaller events. But we also did a white label version for large scale conferences and exhibitions, and it worked. The white label version, it became the main revenue source for the company. So that was also a pivot. But the biggest pivot I have ever done is COVID. Mm. We work with events, and then overnight, COVID, lockdown all over, and I have seen our revenues going from very high to almost zero. And I remember before March 2020, I was literally at 6 different cities just in that month attending events, and I arrived in Cairo just a couple of days before the lockdown, and I was just there. So we had to think. I think it was a very emotional experience, but very tough, but also it needed a lot of persistence and perseverance. So we had to think what should we do? Should we just call it off and shut it down, or just go back to the drawing board and think, what should we do for us, for the team, and also for our customers? Mm. And we did a pivot. In 6 weeks, we hosted the first virtual conference on the platform with 1,300 attendees. It was a great hit. We got amazing feedback, and we kept enhancing the platform since then. That's the biggest pivot I did.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. So, you were an entrepreneur, an owner of a business that was going from city to city to city, suddenly to be stuck. I mean, home, to be fair, Cairo, yeah. But you were stuck. And it was, you're going to stay here because you are not allowed out of the country. And you've been building a business for 9 years. You'd built a team. You'd been making good money or fantastic money, building this fantastic business. And then boom, you just completely draw a line under that. It stops. Yeah. And then you managed to not only pivot, you managed to persuade existing investors to be like, give me some more money so I can go build this virtual event platform. And that's exactly what you did. But tell me about how did you know? Like, you couldn't predict the future. We, of course, everyone who's an audience member of this podcast and anyone that we know, no one knew that it was going to be 1 week, 2 months, 2 years. How did you make that risk or that guess to basically spend all the money that you had stockpiled into this completely different direction?
I don't know. It's we tracked that before like the outbreak itself. Like we have seen it in some of our customers in Asia. So we have seen some like cancellations, events are getting postponed and canceled and so on. So we were tracking that before it actually happened, like worldwide. At the beginning, it was like a denial phase, like this is just like a couple of weeks and everything will be back to normal. And then we were hit by the reality. And the decision was based on like let's go back and see what we have and what are the resources and what can we build. And we had the infrastructure, like we work with events, so we had all the components. It's just a matter of like reimagining the product, reimagining the user experience and how people are going to attend events. So virtual events, it was like everyone was building a virtual platform back then, but we needed to make sure we have something different so we can stand out and reimagine like the whole journey and the life cycle of a person attending an event. And also helping our customers. Like I spent like, I don't know, weeks and weeks like talking to customers, talking to everyone who host an event, like our customers, trying to help them understand what's happening and how can they move their business forward as well. Because it was like chaos, like everyone was freaking out, including us. but we had to do, we had to like bet on something and take it from there. Yeah, I think we just like, we had a thought process, like if we build this and we have this and that, like if we talk to our investors, if we can convince investors to bet on that, imagine the market or try to have a clear like understanding about the market, what's happening, where are we going, that will help us like plan for the future. And take baby steps, like we were ready to do anything by then. Like take a step and then see the results and then maybe you can do another pivot or something. So everything was open to do anything.
I guess it's also the speed at which you moved, like to be able to go, yes, sure, infrastructure was there, but you were not a virtual events business.
100%.
And you went in 6 weeks to lay on your first virtual event, prove the concept and then go from there, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So let's.
I was lucky. I had an amazing team.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, how many were you at that point?
We were around like 35. We had to cut costs here and there, make sure that we're tight and we're lean enough. But we also wanted everyone to be like focused and don't worry. About, like this is something I'm actually proud of, that we had to set an example, and we also had to make sure that our team is in a good mental space, because everyone was very scared at this time for their families, for their job security, for everything. Like, it was a crazy time. So we had to spend a lot of time talking to them, making sure we are very transparent and honest, but at the same time, we give them everything we can, or we provide everything we can for them to stay focused and really commit and work in a productive way, because remote work was also new. Like we had an office and we used to go to the office every day, and suddenly overnight we had to stay at home and work remotely. So we spent a lot of time like developing this remote work environment, provide everything we can, think about all the details. And I actually believe that we were more productive with remote work, and we made sure that no one actually stayed like overwork, because we wanted them to like be in a good mental space as well.
Amazing. So, I mean, this pivot eventually, well, it was the leading factor into your acquisition by Bevy. But before we get to that point, you had raised money over the course of Aventus's life, $4 million in total over multiple rounds. But one of those led you from Cairo to the Middle East in Dubai. Was that your choice to move the business, or your co-founding team's choice to move the business to Dubai as a base? Or was that something that the investors sort of pushed you, or maybe it was a requirement of that investment?
I would say it was a requirement for the business because it made sense. Dubai is still the headquarter for events, I would say, in the Middle East. Most of the big conferences and exhibitions happen there. Most of the big corporations have headquarters there. So it made sense from that sense. So I used to go back and forth all the time. And when we were at a point where we were trying to land bigger size conferences and exhibitions, and also we were at the scaling point. Mm. So we needed to be where our customers are. So I just moved there, tried to land a few customers, it worked. And the more customers we were getting, it made sense to just set up the business, start hiring a team there, mainly go-to-market team, like our engineering and product team were in Cairo all the time. But it was more of a go-to-marketing hub in Dubai.
Mm, yeah, makes sense. So one of those large events that you attended was the 2016 Global Entrepreneurial Summit in Silicon Valley. Now, somehow you managed to end up on stage. Now, not only that, the person that announced your name on stage was none other than President Barack Obama at the time. Pretty amazing. What we'll do is we'll pause the YouTube video now for anyone who's watching to watch that clip of him announcing your name.
Mai Madat of Egypt, who's a software engineer who started a company called Eventus, which is a one-stop online shop for people who organize events. Jean Bosco has done pretty well for himself, the founder and CEO of Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg, they're the real experts. Let's welcome them on stage and we'll start having a conversation with them. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
But what was so amazing about that is, how are you feeling? Like when he announces your name, the President of the United States of America says, "Mai Madat, welcome to the stage." What were you feeling at that time?
Scared, amazing. It was an amazing experience. Very terrifying, it's a lifetime experience. It doesn't happen every day. And I don't know. I think back then I wasn't really thinking what's happening, so I can move on with the panel itself. But yeah, it was big, huge.
Yeah. I mean, you were literally the seat next to the president at the time. And then I think it was two other guests or three other guests. And at the other end was a pretty successful tech entrepreneur, Mr. Mark Zuckerberg. So, you know, you got to shake both of their hands. You got to have a conversation with them. I mean, I've got to ask, were they nice? Were they interesting?
Very nice. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, that was literally a lifetime experience. It was great. We had time to talk backstage. We had time to chat, and the conversation itself was very open, very interesting. I think what's very fascinating about President Obama is he was prepared. He was prepared, knowing my name, what we do, the company, what's the last thing we launched, and all of that. So that was very impressive. And very interesting to have the President of the United States interested in showcasing examples from different parts of the world. Mm. And also the focus on entrepreneurship, because this is how we push countries forward and the economy forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Emerging markets and helping them grow their presence. And obviously you were the person who was able to share that voice, which is pretty incredible. So talk us through how did the process start with you sort of attending an event, not knowing President Obama at the end, and somehow ending up on stage? Because we've talked before, it's quite an interesting story on how you actually made it to that. It wasn't booked in weeks in advance and you had that opportunity lined up or you applied for the process. It was nothing like that at all.
Not at all. It's I think as a founder, you need to be very humble, you need to hustle as well. And I think the universe works its way to for things to happen and in your way. I was literally like just applying for the event, very last minute, to be honest. I applied I saw the announcement, I applied on the last day, last minute, and then I forgot about it. And then a few months later, I got like an invitation to attend the event as a normal attendee, like everyone else. And then just like before the event, I got an email from someone to meet and just talk about my experience before joining the event. And then at the first day of the event, I was actually told that if I want to join the panel, because it wasn't announced that Mark Zuckerberg is attending, it wasn't announced that the President Obama is attending the event. So it was like a very last minute, and I wasn't supposed to tell anyone, or we really didn't have like any time to plan or think about it, or even like, we didn't have any brief. It was very natural, very dynamic. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. How did someone get in touch with you regarding sort of that invitation? I think we spoke before, and it was you were maybe not going to reply to this email because you thought it might be spam. So
yeah.
So how did that come about?
It's literally, I received an email from someone at thewhitehouse.com, and it was crazy, like someone saying like, hey Mai, I know you're attending this conference and would love to chat, would love to meet and chat, let me know when you're here. I thought like this is, it's too good to be true. So probably it's not, it's a fake event or something, it's a spam. And then I spoke to my co-founder, I forwarded the email and they said like, look what I got. And she said like, just reply, let's see what's happening. And they did. And the next day we're meeting and everything happened.
That's incredible. I mean, off the back of that, and of course your great success of being, I can say this, probably one of the most successful tech entrepreneurs to come out of Egypt. You are a female entrepreneur as well, which we'll dig into in a second. But you ended up on the cover of Forbes Middle East, Forbes Middle East.
Yeah.
Obviously, incredible. I'm very interested. How did that process? You know, do you have a sort of say in the content that goes out? Did you get invited to, of course, a photo shoot, etc.? Talk us through that process for anyone who may be listening who wants to be on the cover of Forbes.
Yeah, I think that actually happened after conference with President Obama and Mark Zuckerberg. It was crazy. Like this event, actually, it turned my life somehow. It's suddenly like people are recognizing me at the streets and like I'm all over the place and people come and shake hands. It's amazing, but it also adds a lot of pressure and a lot of responsibility, I would say. And then Forbes made a piece about me. It was an interview, very long interview, and we had a photo shoot, and they told me it would be on the cover, on the front cover. It's amazing as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. And we've interacted online, and you have a fan base in Egypt. Like you have so much love and support from your home nation with anything you do. Obviously, you know, meeting the president and of course Mark Zuckerberg as well. It's not many people get that opportunity, of course. So it is incredible. But let's loop it back to, that's not the only reason. The other reason is that you have built a very successful career thus far. How do you balance that success and I guess fame as well with, you know, now you have twins, you have a husband. How do you balance that work to sort of life for you?
Yeah, great question. I think part of that is like we were part of the first wave of entrepreneurs in Egypt. As I told you, like we in 2011, 2012, there was literally like no ecosystem, no accelerators, investors, no events or anything. So we started, and then a wave happened. Like some startups started to and some entrepreneurs started to come out of this time frame. Few of them continued their journey and been very successful, but also I think somehow we set an example and we showed another generation that you can really do this, and you can start building, you can create a team, you can hire, you can have a company, you can have an office, and you can travel, and somehow there's an opportunity for you to be on the front cover of Forbes and on a stage like that. So it was more of like inspiring people. And also one thing is like being also like trying to help as much as we can. Like one thing I'm proud that I do that, but I'm trying to give back as much as I can because I had great support system at the beginning. A lot of people helped me, a lot of mentors, early investors and so on. So because I was just like graduated from school like 2 years before starting Eventus or 3 years, and I literally had like no experience in sales or managing a team or going through legal contracts and term sheets and all of that. So one part is trying to give back with your knowledge and also set an example so you can inspire more people to be founders and be entrepreneurs without like putting all the fame about being a founder. It's actually very hard, and like it's not for everyone. You need certain skills to be in that place. How I balance? Wow. I as a founder, you just like you hustle, you try, you do your best. Like at sometimes. When I started Eventus, I was literally alone. I was single. I can travel the world. I can be whatever I want. I can do whatever I want. But right now it's different. Like I have family and kids, and this is a full-time job on its own.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course it's challenging, and you have to, as we sort of said off camera, you have to do a full-time job, which is actually taking care of your kids. And then you have to go do the job that pays the bills as well. Obviously, second time around as a founder, that is gonna be completely different to, as you said, 10, 12 years ago, where you're doing it as a single person, able to be in this country 1 minute and the next country the next and have no responsibilities. But you know, there's obvious benefits and amazing things of having a family as well. So you give back loads to the tech community, but also your home community of Egypt and the Cairo ecosystem. You do loads. So what is your advice to maybe someone in Cairo, in that ecosystem that you grew up, your business, and helped you grow? What would you say to, let's say, a 21-year-old who's come out of university and they're looking up to you, or they're looking up to any entrepreneur at all? And what would you say to them as sort of maybe your advice or maybe your support that you'd give to them?
I think we're in a different time. Like everything is moving very fast right now with Gen AI and with the technology advancement we're seeing every day. It's totally different like times. I think everyone is trying to educate themselves about what's happening, and people need to be like learning and reading and following up with what's happening. Starting a company is very rewarding on many levels, but also very challenging on different levels. It's not a full-time job. You need to be working like 24/7, thinking about what you're doing, and finding product market fit is not easy at all. Finding team, finding co-founders, and working with co-founders is also very challenging. So there is a lot of things you need to think about. But the first is you need to make sure you have the skill set to actually do it. So part of that is learning. My advice is actually join a startup. Try to be early from the early employees so you can get a sense about the startup, like environment, lifestyle, how people think and move. Because when you join early, you basically, if it's like 4, 5, 6 people in a company, they're trying to do everything from sales and marketing to developing to operations to like literally doing anything, coming up with a name and making sure we have customers and we're paying the bills. So that teaches you different skill set, being that generalist in understanding a thing about everything. So that will be the best test and the best learning experience, I would say, before starting your own company.
Yeah, I agree. I did the exact same. I joined a couple of different startups before founding my first business. And I was very fortunate. I was looking up to, or my managing directors, my bosses, were very good to me. They gave me a lot of exposure to everything from finances to the growth side of the business. That was my role. At the time, I was a marketeer, so I spent all of my time trying to grow somebody else's business before deciding to try and grow my own business. But I agree, I think getting involved in a startup at an early stage is the best way to just get the wider exposure, because you get to be this far from the product team every single day, or maybe it's a sales team, maybe it's just whatever skill set that you may not have yourself. So I completely agree. So if we then jump to the end of the story, which is when somebody's looking to sell, or they're looking to IPO, get acquired, etc. With Bevy, so Bevy is the business that acquired your business, Aventus, you knew them for a number of years prior to selling to them or being acquired to them. Would you recommend that as one of the best routes? Get to know a partner, or maybe a better way of phrasing this is, did you know from sort of minute one that this was a business that you wanted to sell to, and that's why or how you were maybe befriending them to sort of maybe look for a future acquisition? Is that something that was in your mind at the time?
Maybe not at the beginning, but down the road, I expected there might be something there, and we're trying to develop that relationship. But I think having someone who's like a customer or a partner turn it into an acquirer, this is a traditional case. And I think it's the easiest one, easiest for both, actually, for the buyer and for the seller, because for us, we knew them, we knew the team, we knew the founders, we already integrated with them. We did like 10 events with them or something. So we already had this experience, we met them in person. So there was synergy somehow. So we actually, at the end, when we were making the decision, we had another offer and we were weighing between them. And because of this relationship, we decided to move on with that offer. We thought it will be culturally more, there would be more fit for us.
Yeah, it makes sense. And obviously once you do get acquired or you sell a business, often, I would say pretty much the majority of cases, the co-founding team or the founding team of that business that gets acquired often goes on to help with the transition between the businesses, and you then kind of go from founder back to employee, which is something which a lot of founders struggle with. You'd been running 100%. Your own business for 10 years. You'd never really done the employee thing. So how was that for you?
Very hard, very challenging. For two things. First, I think even before the acquisition, once we started this conversation, there's a lot of excitement, and having this financial freedom and having this success story is amazing. But on the other hand, this is my baby, this is my business I built for 10 years. And in our case, we're going to fully integrate and shutting down the brand Aventus. So that was very emotional as well. And I don't know, I struggled with that. I had an identity crisis at some point, I'd say. And it needs a lot of like founder, I wouldn't say therapy, but like you need to talk to people who have done this before. So I try to reach out to people who have been there before and speak to them and get some guidance and some advice. Being an employee is not easy. Some people, I have seen other founders actually strive in this environment, but like some others, they struggle with being not being in the driver hat. For me, like I enjoyed that. It was a different exposure. We were working with on a different scale, different team. Different culture as well. Like Bevy is a US company, fully remote team, most of them based in the West Coast and East Coast. And so it was a lot of like new things. So that was amazing. A lot of learning experience, seeing like the processes and how the company really work from the inside, learning about like the go-to-market and the product and all of that. So that was really interesting. But also, like, I always wanted to move fast and do this and do that and, like, drive more ideas and drive the business in a certain direction. And being an employee is different. Like, you need to make sure you coordinate with different teams, different heads of the teams, and make sure, like, we're following a certain direction and follow a certain vision.
Yeah, I mean,
I think I'm a founder at heart. Like this is what I know how to do. This is what I like what to do. So I always actually knew that I would be doing another startup, maybe sooner or later. But like, think.
I mean, it's in the DNA, right?
Yeah.
So it's in the DNA to be a founder, and I think suddenly going into one a ship that you don't captain. But also kind of having a boss, however way you look at it, you have got like someone that you are reporting into. Whilst previously, I suppose you may consider you were reporting into maybe investors, but it's still different when you might have a CEO whose like job it is to direct the entire company. Despite, of course, the initial interest or learning lesson of being inside a different business, etc. I think you just by curious nature, that's awesome. But I think it gets tiring pretty quickly when you kind of probably have that itch to sort of go and do something else, which is obviously what you've gone and done since.
But also, like I have to say, I was very fortunate with this experience. Like Derek Andreessen, the founder of Bevy, he's a great guy. He's a good friend, and he has been we have been connected for a long time before that. And he is a person like to look up to. He's actually investing in my new company, so that's amazing.
Yeah, amazing. So yeah, you're milking him for money second time around.
I think it's more of a support and believing in us than the financial part.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, it's great to have that support. So when you did sell, there is obviously a bit which I feel doesn't get talked about too much, which is you're excited. You're going to be wealthier, like immediately. Well, not immediately, but when that cash hits the bank balance, you got a team. They might not always be as excited by that acquisition potentially. When you went and announced to your team of sort of 20 to 50 people at the time, how did you feel? Were you excited to tell them because you were excited, or were you nervous? Like, how does that conversation go?
I was very excited. They were very nervous. So we had to wait until we have answers for most of the questions we expected they will ask. So it's not like a big surprise or something. We had to, like one thing is like people usually are afraid with changes that their roles will be, there will be a risk for their jobs. One of the things we did is we made sure that everyone on the team joins Bevy, and that was great. Like we had answer for them, we had security. It was also financially rewarding for them, but we had to make sure like their day-to-day jobs is not going to be affected, and in a way that like working with this remote company, with this different culture, different direction, and so on. So we have to answer all these questions like at the beginning. And we also had to show them a lot of empathy, a lot of, they needed to feel that we are on their side and we have their back. So I think that was important.
Yeah, amazing. So then let's look at it from a personal level. So from a personal level, you become richer. You come wealthier.
Yes.
So 6 to 12 months probably or so after signing on the dotted line, you suddenly get a lot more zeros in the bank account. How did that feel when you got that through? And I guess I have to ask, like, what did you spend the money on? Like, what was the first big purchase that you spent that money on?
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. Like, the financial freedom is awesome, and it helps you look at things differently and start prioritizing different things in life once we have this freedom and security. What did I spend? I traveled. I got a new car. I think that's the biggest thing I did. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, you also moved to London as well,
yeah.
Right? So that probably brings me on nicely to our next
sort of the freedom to move.
Topic, right? Which is Ginny.
Yes.
It is coming out of stealth right now. You're raising, you're building a team. Round two.
Yes.
Talk me through how excited you are to sort of get back into the founder world.
Yeah, super excited. I'm also starting this with my co-founder from Eventus, so it's literally like version two.
The dream team have been reunited.
Yeah, exactly. London is a great place to be in. Starting a company from here, different ecosystem, so there's a lot for me to actually learn and navigate the market and the ecosystem, and it's different here. Jenny, we're solving a challenge that we faced, so I really can relate to what we're building. I can relate to our customers and their needs. I think being a second time founder, it's easier in some parts. Like, you have done this before, probably you have done all the mistakes before, so you are trying not to repeat the same mistakes, but also you come with like tons of experience, connection, you know where to go when you're looking for something or like you want to do something. So it's easier, but also usually founders are more critical on themselves and on what they are building. So one thing, like since we wanted to start a company, it took us a lot of time to actually think about the idea and shape the idea and make sure we have the right one to start with. So talking to a lot of customers, talking to literally a lot of people, trying to make sure that we have the right dynamics, like the right idea, the right solution, the right team in place. So that's also, very
awesome.
Interesting. Yeah.
Awesome. So there's no manual to being an exited founder. I think this is something which people just assume, oh, well, you just get richer and that's that. But what would you have done differently? Like, there must be loads of lessons. Like, at the end of the day, founder, you did that for the first time, and then you moved into an exited founder. Now you're in a second time founder. But let's talk about that middle phase between the businesses. Like, would you have done anything differently, or any sort of advice to maybe someone who is in the process of exiting their business?
I took a break.
Took a break?
Yeah. I took a 12-month break. It was like very much needed. I needed that for myself. I needed to reflect on the journey, on what I want to do next, like setting priorities and setting goals and relaxing and not doing anything, or actually in my case, like kids and doing lots of things. But it's spending time with family is actually very, very important. And it gives you a different perspective in life and in what you want to do in your future.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest change, right? Between round one and round two is before you just had one baby, the business, and now you've got two babies and a third one, which is being built out there in the world. You've got two lovely twins.
Yes.
What's it like being a mum and now going into the world of raising funds and doing that as a parent and as someone who has, I guess, family responsibilities?
you need to be juggling lots of things at the same time, but as a founder, this is a skill you need to, or this is a muscle you need to grow into. So yeah, I think I'm very grateful for the support I have. Like I have a support system, like my family, my husband, and even my co-founder. Like she's amazing and she's helping me a lot, and we're friends before even starting the business, so she understands that. So there is, like you appreciate the flexibility of working on your own times, and like I can work at night, I can work early in the morning, and if the kids are sick, for example, and they are not at daycare, you have to do what you have to do. But having the support system and having like your family to understand what you're going through and supporting you and actually pushing you to do that, it's very, very important. I don't know how I could have done this without the support system I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I like to say is that when you're growing a business, you find out who your true friends are.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, majority of those that understand what you're trying to do and the sacrifices you have to make, that dinner you can't go to, maybe it's a birthday event or birthday party that you're invited to, but you know that it's a Wednesday and you've got work the next day and you really need to get up early. And for you, it's do the nursery run and then get back to work. I think your friendship groups, your families, those really close sort of 10, 20 people in your life are so important to sort of probably the success of your business, which I think people maybe neglect that part, which is how important those people are around you, not the network from a business perspective, but maybe a personal network, and they are actually as much of a foundation to you being maybe, let's say, self-disciplined, determined, all those things you look at within yourself. Have you had any maybe bad experiences with sort of friends or family that have not supported you in a way where then that's actually maybe hindered you?
I think it's more of a self-guilt, like you want to be there for your friends and your family, so you're missing these. You start feeling like, I want to be there. I'm not that of a good friend or something. But that's like with time. I think as a founder, you need to start prioritizing this. And one thing I learned throughout the way is setting some quality time, like taking breaks every now and then, taking some time off, spending time with friends and family, and like really focusing on that. I think that's very important for you before them, for your mental health, for your, like to go back to work energized and really like you can give your 100%, you need these human connections and human interactions, and you need to feel loved and supported and all of that. So it's for you and for the business, because if you are in your 100%, you'll be giving the business 100% and pushing the business forward. But if you are not in a good state, you will be just in front of your computer but not really doing anything, or not really like pushing things forward. So one thing I like after a few years, I decided, like working literally 24/7, I decided, like, you know what, I'll start taking weekends off, and which is very normal, very basic, but as a founder, you don't think about that, and it's a habit. Like you grew this habit, even if you are like thinking about something, you don't have to like do it right now. You just enjoy some time with your family.
Me, it's virtually impossible to switch off.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, I guess what you're saying is for 10 years, you didn't take many weekends off.
Yeah.
But now it's important to spend that time with the family. Yeah. So acquisition, super important. The only way to make money is to sell it to someone, whether it be a service, product, whatever that may be. Let's talk about how you acquired customers, let's say in the initial path of Aventus. And how maybe that differs from now moving forward with Ginny.
I think at the beginning, like when you start a business, you think that if I build a great product, people will come to me and the product will sell itself, which is not true. most of the time not true, or maybe 100% of the time not true. You need to do your work. You need to do like great marketing. You need to have a sales strategy and go-to-market strategy, and you need to put the pieces in place for people to find your product and for you to be in front of where they are, where they are looking for the service. So I think this is the biggest mistake first-time founders, or I would say not experienced founders, think. Right now, no, it's more of like, it's a process. We're thinking about that before even launching. While we're building the product, we are thinking about every single like user journey, and thinking about the different stakeholders who will be using our product, and how we're positioning that for them. What messages are we using for the end user, and then for, in our case, like the AE or the sales rep, and then for their managers, and then for the revenue officer or the CEO, if it's a smaller company, to make the buying decision. So we're conscious about that and designing for that, and we make sure that we have a clear ROI from the beginning, delivering ROI from day zero, so they can get the ROI, they can feel the value, so they appreciate the product and keep using the product. Even if it's like very small, we don't have to build everything from the beginning, like small features, but deliver the value, and then you keep growing that and growing the experience. I think this is what you learn as a second-time founder.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, it takes years to learn that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also, you know, your network will be a lot stronger.
Yeah.
You are someone who is a massive believer in network. Obviously, your previous business is pretty much around building networks and connections at events, and just getting the most value out of going to a networking event or a trade show event, whatever that may look like. So you're now in London, new city, but same might. What are you looking at for the next sort of 12 months in terms of increasing your network? And I guess, do you think it's really important? Do you think that's one of the most important things you can have as a founder, about pushing yourself out there and building that network?
Yeah, 100%. It's so networking is not about like going to a bar and meeting people, or going to an event and just talking to random people. It's more of about building relationships and these human connections. Like we met because I sent you a random LinkedIn message and I asked you to go for a coffee because you posted something asking for founders to go for coffee. So, and we were meeting with maybe no agenda, but with one thing in common, that you want to give back and you meet other founders, and I want to also meet other founders and learn, but also if I can help in any way, I would love to. So it's a mutual benefits for everyone, and being just like humble, not selling all the time, just trying to learn from people, because as a founder or as a human, there's tons of things you don't know about, and with every experience and every person you meet, there's an opportunity to learn something from their experience. Having this like open mindset, I think it's very important. It's not about like just randomly calling people and distributing business cards or brochures and hoping for people to visit your website and subscribe. It doesn't happen like that. You need to build a relationship. And this is in the core of like B2B sales. Like, you do cold reach out and you send emails and everything, but once you land a prospect or a customer, you need to build that relationship as well. You need to make sure they will benefit from your product. So there is a product solution fit. Because if you sell them something they don't want, or it's not solving their problem, they will churn at some point. So making sure there is a fit from the beginning, so they will stick with you and increase the lifetime value and all of that, and they will upsell, and this is like the dream for every founder.
Yeah, of course. I think that's the challenge, isn't it? I think you have a sales executive, account executives, whose pure task is to generate business for their boss or their business that they're a part of. But actually, if you have more informal conversations, you just try and network. Of course, you send the cold outreach and the cold sales, et cetera, to try and get those easy wins or those quicker wins. But actually, those relationships that you build over time, you can take it to the next company that you're a part of, or in general, you might learn something. For me, we met through an online connection and a mutual interest of just sharing stories, which is, of course, what I'm trying to do here at the Everyday Founder. But it's taking it offline. I mean, we both run online businesses. Pretty much every business out there at the moment, pretty much in 2024, is an online business. But the power of taking a connection offline and building that relationship, of course, you know, not everyone can do that. We're very fortunate that we're both in London. I'm very fortunate that I can meet dozens of founders each and every week. But the power of that is, even from a sales point of view, and I don't want anyone to think that we're naive, that you build a connection with someone, you tell them about your business, they become interested in you as a person and the business that you have. So when somebody does say, hey, James, I have this need for a solution, they go, well, actually, I met Mai the other week and this is the perfect thing, you guys should speak. And you haven't said to me that I'm going to give you a referral or anything. There's been no transactional relationship whatsoever. And I think for me that is the power of network. But yes, you can fast track that. Go to your events. I think if you're a first time founder, you need to be shouting about your business. You need to be shouting. You need to be going to those events, making the connections, because you just do not know who might walk through that door. I mean, you met your co-founder at an event. Maybe you're going to meet your next, you know, head of, or your next business partner, or that amazing connection. So yeah, the power of events obviously is amazing. And I think, you know, that is the bread and butter of networking.
Yeah, I will actually tell you a story about this. So as Eventus, we were working with the Startup Grind Cairo chapter. I was speaker at their event, they were using Eventus, so kind of customer partner relationship, and then they made an introduction for someone in the global team, and then they asked me to present Eventus at the conference or have a sponsorship package at the conference, and then I turned down the conversation and I said, like, very interested, thank you for that, but how about you using Eventus for the conference? We have this great solution for conferences, and just like try it and let's talk. And the conversation evolved from here. We started like meeting and talking about the product. I sent them a lot of like use cases and I gave them a demo and all of that. And then fast forward like few months later, they were actually using Eventus at the global conference in Redwood City. And then they loved the experience. So we renewed the contract and we have been working with them for all their conferences. And that eventually led to the acquisition, because it's the same team, it's the same founders. So if I didn't have that initial connection for the team, it wouldn't happen. So like networking is amazing, but it's not the fake networking that people usually think about it. Like, it's not about just asking for what you want or selling all the time. It's about being genuine in the connection, being genuine to offer help or offer support when you can, or just like knowing new people who might be your friends or might be your customers, employees, team, partners, like, you never know. Having this open mind about networking and about meeting new people, I think this is the key.
100%. And I think most founders are intelligent human beings, and they can see when someone's trying to be not genuine or just trying to sell, and that doesn't go very far. And equally, if you are someone who is right at the start of their journey, don't be afraid to ask for help. A number of exited founders like yourself give back to new and exciting startups and founders and help them shape their careers. So it's not a case of potentially trying to sell to them. If you ask for their help in the sense of just saying, hey, do you mind giving me some advice, or can you just tell me the story of you as a person, when you were sort of in my shoes, that's when, you know, it's the same, that is actually a better way of indirectly selling to them in a way, because one, you never know, they might like your solution, but two, they will give you invaluable advice and potential strategy, which could fast track your business by months or years potentially.
This is exactly a fundraising strategy.
Yeah.
This is how you build like your fundraising strategy, and this is how you build relationship with investors early on. So you keep like showing them your product, your updates, you keep meeting them, so because at the end they invest in the person, because the business change all the time, we pivot all the time, the market is changing all the time. So they need to know the founder. They need to know the skills and what you can do if you're faced with this big challenge. So building this relationship is important
100%,
over time.
100%. So MyMedHat, where can people find you online if they want to connect?
I'm on LinkedIn, MyMedHat. I think we can leave the...
In the description, of course.
On Twitter, MyMedHat as well.
And watch this space for Genie AI to take off and be the next success story of you and Nihao.
Yeah.
Amazing. MyMedHat, you've been my everyday founder. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Everyday Founder. If you haven't already, like or subscribe wherever you are watching or listening to this episode. If you know of an incredible founder that story needs to be shared, then let me know who you would like to see next on The Everyday Founder via the comment section or messaging me on LinkedIn. These episodes are brought to you by Shake Content, your LinkedIn content agency. So please show them support on all socials so that we can keep bringing you amazing guests and sharing their stories on The Everyday Founder.